So right now marks my favorite time of the week. See, all of the work that's gone into getting sermon ready, all the work that's gone into getting through the week,
I can't do anymore. So now I get to get up here and I get to share what I've learned, share what's challenged me, and share what's sort of come my way and the things that I've wrestled with. I need a volunteer to verify something for me. And since the check is made out to this person, I need Brett to come up here. He loves being in front of people. He has no idea what's about to happen. I just need you to verify something for me. That is a check from the church, right?
Yep.
Written out to whom?
To me.
To Brett. For how much money?
$55,000. Nice.
I just needed that verified. That's all you needed to do. I figure if I start him slowly getting in front of everybody, eventually he'll hold a microphone and say something. Likely not, though. It's a check for $55,000. Now imagine for a moment that that was a check written to you, as it was to Brett, though that check wouldn't clear anything, I'm told. Imagine for a second, though, that I gave you that check, and it was to you, and it was good. What would you do with it? Very first thing that comes to mind is what you do to it. I need you to keep that in mind. Keep in mind what you would do with that check, with that money, because it's incredibly important. $55,000. Why $55,000? Because according to the internet, and the internet is never wrong, according to the internet, that is roughly the median income for a family in Iowa. If you're not familiar with what the median income is, it's if you took all of the incomes of all the households in all of Iowa and you lined them up smallest to biggest, the one that falls in the middle is the median. So the middle average-ish, sort of. $55,000. I'm going to read a story about what somebody did with $55,000. Only it wasn't $55,000. It was 300 denarii, which equates to $55,000. An average income for a person for a year, or for a family for a year. Open to John chapter 12. We're finally out of Lazarus being resurrected, right? Except we're back in Lazarus' house today. See, Jesus left, and he's now back to start what we know as Passion Week. Or to begin to start Passion Week. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, though. Let's remember that Lazarus had died. Jesus chose to not heal him because he loved him. So he chose to let him die because he loved him so that he could raise him from the dead and cause belief. Remember that. It's for causing belief. Belief in Martha, belief in Mary, belief in Lazarus, belief in every person who is there. They didn't all believe. Remember, some went to the Pharisees after Lazarus was raised from the dead to get Jesus in trouble because they didn't want him doing what he was doing. They didn't want to believe. So Jesus left. Left knowing that his time had not come, but it was close to when he was going to die. So he left. 6 days now before the Passover. The Passover, the one where he's going to die. 6 days then before he dies. So keep that timeline in mind. All of the rest of the book of John, until the very last chapter, deals with 6 days. And then the last two chapters. His resurrection is in chapter 20. All of the rest of this is in the next 6 days of a timeline. 6 days before the Passover, John chapter 12, verse 1. Jesus therefore came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, whom he had raised from the dead. So they gave a dinner for him there. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those reclining at the table. Mary, therefore, took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of the disciples, he who was about to betray Jesus, said, "Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, and having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Jesus said, "Leave her alone, so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you will always have with me, but you do not always have me." We're not going to get into that phrase, "the poor you always have with me," because there's a lot there, and it's not for us in this moment at this time, because there's a bigger picture involved here. Guess how much Mary's perfume cost that she dumped on Jesus' feet? $55,000 if you were to go buy it now. So imagine that. Now keep in mind, you're the only person who knows what you thought of doing with $55,000. Do not raise your hand. But I wonder how many of us first thought, "Oh, I could do something great for Jesus with that money." Not, "I could go pay off a car or get a new one, pay off some debts, go out to a really nice dinner. I could take my wife on vacation. I could do all sorts of things that wouldn't be bad." Don't get me wrong. Those aren't bad things, right? But what Mary did with $55,000 was unlike anybody else I've probably ever known. Why? Why did she do it? Why in the world would she do that? There's only really one explanation. She understood the value of Jesus. She truly, really understood how valuable he was. So if she gave him $55,000 worth of stuff, you know what she felt like she lost? Nothing. Because he was far more valuable than that. Which really gave me a lot of consternation this week as I tried to wrestle through, what in the world am I then supposed to do? See, it's troubling to look at a passage and say, this person gave way more than they should have because Jesus was worth the giving. And then to have to ask, what then do I do? And this is not intended to be some sort of beat you upside the head with give me more of your money sort of talk, but there is an element to where this is talking about funding God's ministry with what you have. And we're going to talk about that. But there's got to be some level of disclaimer here. Those of you who were there on Thursday night know we had a discussion dealing with finances and how God would call us to use our funds to follow him as we move forward. And there were a multitude of different ways that we could go through that. It's not even exactly what I'm talking about here. So don't get the two things confused and say, "Oh yeah, this was all put together so that they could raise more money to do more things." No, it's really not. And we're going to get into some different ways that we could use our funds or our stuff to build God's kingdom. But what we have to understand is the big picture point is what? Jesus is worth everything you could give to him. And there's nothing that you have, be it your time, your talents, your possessions, your money, your job, your spouse, your kids, your anything, nothing that you have that even begins to compare with how valuable he is. And yet, we have a tendency to have a common thought. And the common thought is to hoard. It's why we have more things than we need. It's why we have to... It's why there are a certain thing when you drive through any town, no matter how big or how small, that really frustrates me to the core of who I am. And some of you won't necessarily like what I'm about to say, but that's okay. See, as Americans, there's a group of people who have made a lot of money off of us because of this idea of hoarding. And that's people who own storage units. We have beautiful homes and more stuff that can go in our beautiful homes, so we have to rent more space to house our stuff that we hardly ever see, so that if later we possibly could maybe want this stuff, we can go and retrieve it if we remember we still have it. And I realize there's some joking level there, but I mean, just drive through town and see how many different places store your stuff if you want them to. Now, there are some things you need to store. There are some things that are too large that you may have to just store out in your driveway. I get that. I'm not opposed to having storage placed somewhere else. That's not the point. The point is that you've got a closet of stuff that you never ever see because you've just got more stuff than you need. That's hoarding. Okay? I don't care if you keep it or if you throw it away. That's not my point. My point is just simply, I know how we use our $55,000. We get stuff for us. I do that. I like to have things, and I like to have nice things. And so I do what I can to get nice things so that I can have these things. And too infrequently do I then wonder how much of what I've got could I just totally and completely give away to Jesus to be used however he would see it being used. There's a little principle within giving that we're just going to touch on and then move off of a little bit. And that's the principle of this. If it doesn't hurt you at all to give what you've given, you haven't given anything. Because if it never hurts to give, Jesus has a story that he walks through. And there's a rich guy who comes and gives huge amounts of money away to the church, to the synagogue. And there's a little old lady who came and she gave just a tiny little bit. And the lady who gave just a tiny little bit, Jesus said, gave way more. And God would use way more than the huge sums of money that somebody gave because they just had extra. If it doesn't cost you anything, if it doesn't hurt you at all, if it's not a sacrifice to give, you haven't given, you really haven't given to God. I guarantee, that it costs something for Mary to dump $55,000 worth of stuff out. Well, maybe she didn't dump it all out. The scripture doesn't actually say she dumped it all out, right? Actually, it says she doesn't. And it says she doesn't because Jesus says to Judas, hey, leave her alone so she can keep this for my burial 6 days away. Not going to be that hard to keep it that long, but apparently she has not already dumped it all out. Otherwise, she wouldn't have anything to keep for his burial. So she didn't dump it all out, but she bought it to use on Jesus. $55,000. In this discussion on Thursday, for those of you who were there, this will be recap for you. For those of you who weren't, I wish you could have been. Well, I take that back. You Welton clan, you didn't need to be there. The rest of you, I wish you could have been there. We talked about areas that were deficient, and somebody reminded me of something afterwards, and I have to make sure this is painfully clear. When I talk about us being deficient in something, that's not me saying, boy, we're awful people and I hate you, okay? I'm a golfer, far better golfer than I used to be, and I've learned something in the last few years, and that's how to hit the ball about 80 yards. I can hit the ball 250 yards pretty easily. To hit the ball 80 yards is really, really hard for me. So I've had to learn over the last few years, if I want to become a better golfer, I've got to figure out how to hit the ball 80 yards and get it to stop where I want it to stop. And I'm not perfect at it, but I'm a whole lot better than I was. I was deficient in my ability to hit 80-yard shots. I'm far better now, but you know what I still am? Deficient in my ability to hit 80-yard shots because I'm not as good as I should be. Because I still miss, right? That's deficiency. Just simply coming up short. It's not doesn't mean I'm a terrible golfer, and it doesn't mean I don't like me as a golfer. It just means I need to get better. The only way I can get better is if I see where I need to get better. So keep that caveat in mind as I say this next thing. We have ministry deficiencies. Areas where we fall short that we need to build up and to make right before God, before Jesus. Why? Because he's worth it. We came up with various different ways to approach some of these ministry issues. One of them is to say, this section of ministries is not functioning to the level at which it should. If we were to hire somebody to help us direct and guide those ministries, they would be able to function not at this level, but at this level where we want them to function. A second way that we could do that was to say, here's our list of ministries that are functioning at this level and we want them to be better. We could get our people, you as our body, to volunteer more time to make those ministries function at this level. And third, even if we were to do one of these two and try to make these ministries function at this level, there's still a problem, and that is we don't have enough space to house the people that we need to have to do the ministries we're trying to do. This room has enough space at the moment. But you step out of this room and you try to go to Sunday school classes, try to do things with children, and there's no space, right? That's just not. We're using every room that we can use on Sunday morning. And in fact, that's pointed out by the fact that when I showed up, my office was doubled as a classroom on Sunday mornings because there was no other room to put people in. So another way that we could build ourselves to fulfill what God has called us to is to have the space to do that, which would require building something, which requires money. So that one, facility, requires us money. Hiring somebody requires us money. Getting our people to volunteer at the level that's going to make those ministries increase costs us other resources, time, and energy. I'm not standing here this morning to tell you what direction we're going or what we have to do. Not my point. Wasn't even my point on Thursday night. So if you missed it, know that our point wasn't to say, here's what we must do. It was to say, here's where we need to grow. How are we going to get there? So the question now is different. The question now that each one of us has to imagine an answer for is, what are we willing to give to get there? What are you willing to give of who you are to accomplish not us doing great things, but to accomplish us fulfilling the ministry God has called us to? What are you willing to give? What am I willing to give? And what, conversely, them and am I not willing to give or not willing to let you give? Case in point, I'm not willing to let you give so much that you miss family time, that you no longer get to spend time with your families, because if I get you to give that much and you do and we do great things, we've failed miserably. So I'm not willing to let you do that. This is not a call to say, oh, everything that I do must be done at church and must be done for this set of things that Brock says we have to do. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is Jesus is worth you giving, I guarantee, more than you're giving. And some of what he's called you to give is to give up going to play golf for me so that I can spend more time with my family. Give up playing golf for me so that I can do the things with the body here that I need to do. Not give up my family so that I can go play golf, or my family so that I can come up here and do more. See, I have a personality that says I could put in 70 hours a week. I have an energy level that says I could put in 70 hours a week. I would be okay with that. And my family would not be. Because then I would come home to do what? To sleep. I don't know how all of you function in that. But if you have a home so that you can sleep in it, and that's really all you do, you're failing. Because you're not giving to what Jesus has called you to give to. You're giving to something else. I don't care if that's your work. I don't care if that's your hobbies. I don't care if that's up here at church volunteering for stuff. I don't care. We've got to keep those things in mind. We see something important in here along those lines. And we see it out of Judas. Judas is portrayed beginning in the beginning of the book, but really John is taking us into where Judas is an awful man, right? He's conniving. He's a thief. Here's what he says about him. But Judas Iscariot, one of the disciples who was about to betray Jesus, keep that in mind, John says, he was about to betray him, said, Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii? Why didn't she sell it for $55,000? And give the money to the poor. That sounds good, right? Remember the rich young ruler? Sell all that you have and give it to the poor, Jesus tells the rich young ruler. Judas is saying, well, why doesn't she do that? It sounds good. He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief and he was going to steal the money, or at least some of it. Paraphrasing that last verse. Judas said something that looked good to all of the disciples and all of the people there, but he said it for the wrong reasons. He said it so that he could get ahead with it, so that he would look good with it, not so that it would turn out to be something worthy of Jesus. Sometimes we as people have an issue where we know the right thing to say, we know the right thing to do. Maybe the right thing to do or the good thing to do is to volunteer off at church to do something or to go help this person out, but we do it for the purpose of being seen. I shared this the other night. I had in an elder meeting, I had a friend in high school, unnamed. Every time, we went to a small Christian school, so keep that in mind. So there was like paper signups for going to help different people to do different things, right? Every time there was a sign-up list, this person would sign up for the purpose of coming back in 30 minutes and scratching his name off so that he looked to everybody else like he was wanting to help and it wasn't going to work, as opposed to the fact that he didn't want to help. He just wanted to look good. We do that sometimes. We do that sometimes where we say, yeah, I want to help or I can do these things, and we either do them begrudgingly or we end up backing out. We say good things and we show good, what we would call good intentions, but we don't intend to keep it. We may say in this moment, yes, Jesus is worth everything I've got. I'm going to not buy a new car. I'm going to take all of that money and I'm going to give it away. And then not follow through. I have another friend, again, unnamed. This person was going to buy something in a year, something they had saved up money to buy, okay? Come the time in the year when they were going to purchase this thing, they decided that there was a ministry need that they could help fill financially. So they took all of the money that they had saved up for this thing and spent it on this ministry that needed help. Gave it away to building Jesus' name and to building his kingdom around them. Saying, if God wants us to buy that thing in years to come, he'll give us the funds again for it some other time. Those are two very different things, aren't they? Two very, very different things. And what we have here is we have Martha serving Jesus, and we have Mary giving what she has extravagantly for Jesus. So, whether you're part of this body or whether you're not, some of the things that we're going to highlight as ways to do that, they're going to be the same. Now, one that's specifically pertinent to this body is I need you, regardless of how we move forward with these other things, I need you to give more of you. How so, you might ask? How do you need more given? And this is not true for everybody, but by and large, here's what we need. We need people willing to say, I will give up of my energy and my time to help somebody else grow. It's called what? Discipleship. That one-on-one relationship building exercise that we go through that builds relationships, me with another person or one person with another, for the purpose of helping a person grow, for that only purpose. That requires your energy and it requires your time, both as the discipler and the disciplee. The one doing the discipling and the one being discipled. It requires time giving on both accounts. It also requires energy giving. It requires you to give up of your energy to make it happen. Now, that's specifically pertinent to us because that's how we've decided to run our ministry. That is the sole focus of what we're doing. But as we move forward, whether it's here or whether it's somewhere else, we are going to be required of giving more than just our time and our energy. I have no idea how this church stacks up because, A, I don't know how much money you make or how much you give, so I don't know. But I know that by and large, Christians give very little compared to what God calls us to give, as opposed to giving very much, as opposed to what God calls us to give. And that comes because of something. It comes because as we stand and we wonder how big of a check or big of a bill should I give this week or this month to this church that I'm part of, we wonder how much we have to give. Right? Think for yourself. Last time you were going to give money to your church or whatever, did you wonder, how much money do I have to give yet this month in order to be at whatever percent I'm wanting to give? That's a wrong thought. Why? Because it's a thought about money, not a thought about Jesus. You're not wondering, how much is Jesus worth to me right now? How much can I give? And you start to wonder, how much do I have to give in order to meet whatever criteria that I've put out? And the tithe, the 10% tithe that we've talked about, that people talk about, that's sort of the number that we've got in our heads. And we say, in order to reach 10%, I need to give $75 for the rest of this month. Or I need to give $375 for the rest of this month. And it's, I have to give X amount. Once we start thinking how much we have to give to Jesus, there's not a chance in the world we could be where Mary is, because there's nobody telling her, hey, you've got to give $55,000 to Jesus. You've got to take your whole year's worth of money and give it away to him. Nobody's saying that. She's doing it because she has an understanding of just how valuable he is. And as she understands his incredible, immense, deeper than imaginable value, then she says, then I will give everything I can give, not everything I must give. I don't care if that's with your time. I don't care if that's with your money. I don't care if that's with your energy. That's the way we need to view it. What can I give? Because there's going to come times for everybody who has a job where you don't have excess time because your job is requiring more of you. That's okay. If that becomes your normal life, then you've got things out of perspective because your job is taking your place of other things. But there's going to be times where you have to do that. Case in point, if there's an event that we're doing as a church and I'm in charge of it, it will require more of me that week than any other week requires of me. I just have to accept that. That doesn't mean I'm somehow a bad person because this one week required a lot of me. No, it's just what it is. But if every week, week in and week out, I always say to my wife and kids, sorry, I can't be home tonight because I've got to go out and continue to work. I can't be home with you today or tomorrow. I'm just going to be gone all week because I've got to go out and work more. Then what I'm saying is this holds higher value than you. If I say, I can't be discipling people. I've got just too much to do. I don't have enough time to build into something like that. And don't get me wrong, sometimes your discipling is your family. It's got to start there, and then it can move to somebody else. But you say, I don't have time to do that, or I'm not willing to spend that energy. And then realize what we're saying is Jesus isn't worth that, because if he's called us to build each other up, if he's called us to grow in that way, which he absolutely has, and then if we were to say, yeah, I don't have enough to give to that. If he calls us to live this radically different than the world life and we say, yeah, I'm not really good with that. I don't really need to give that much. We've got problems. I can have those and you can have those. We can all have those together and we can look pretty good while we do it. But I know my heart and you know yours. And we have to figure this out. How can we decide as people? How can you as a person make a decision that says, I want to give everything I can, not everything I must? Because Jesus is absolutely worth what we can give. That really may mean that we decide to build something here and we fund it without having to take out any sort of loan. Why? Because we have enough people who could give more to make it happen. That may mean we're going to hire somebody and we're going to have to say we need everybody to pitch in and make this happen. Or both of those may be may nots. It may not be the way God calls us to grow. It may not be what God calls us to do. But understand this. What he calls us to and what he's worth is where we must go. And we must make decisions on every action of every day and with every penny we spend, how much is Jesus worth? How much can I give to what he's doing? And we have to stop asking, how much do I have to give? How much do I have to volunteer? How much energy do I have to give? And then we will be a people who are honoring to him and living like Mary did here. And that is a wonderful way to live because he is worth it. Let's pray. God, I do thank you for this.